This is Steve Sherlock on another internet radio show or podcast, number 129 in the series for Franklin Matters. This captures the audio recording of the community forum held Monday, March 20th, 2017. The forum was hosted by the school committee to facilitate the final two candidates for the next superintendent of Franklin Public Schools. There was one incident during the second candidate interview session where one member of the community was asked to leave and escorted from the council chambers. Other than that, this is the entire recording. Without further ado, here is the recording of the meeting.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am absolutely thrilled to see so many of you. This is well worth your time, so we appreciate you being here. The school committee has asked me to give you a little bit introduction before we introduce. We have two candidates tonight, and after you listen, we are definitely interested in your feedback, because as we've done this before, your feedback does matter, and what you think does matter, because this is the most important job in the town of Franklin. The person we choose will be in charge of the education of your children, and there's nothing we do more important than educating the children of our town. So we would very much like your feedback. Quick as could be, going to the history of this, we have taken this to the school committee seriously. We hired an outside consulting firm. They went through over 75 applications. We've had a tremendous response to this position. And we've come down to the point now where we have two finalists. And these two finalists will go before you tonight, do a visit to the community, to the schools this week. And next Tuesday, as soon as next Tuesday, we may be in the position of going forward with a recommendation for the new superintendent. So again, thank you for being here. I will give you a very brief, I won't give any, come here. This is Dr. Sarah Ahern, and I'm going to let her introduce herself.
Thank you. I'm going to stay standing, even though there's a seat here. I want to be able to make sure that my voice projects and that I can make eye contact, because we've got such a remarkable turnout, and I really want to thank you for being here tonight. I'm really, really thrilled and really pleased to see your investment in such numbers. I know that there's a...
Just for open meeting, this meeting is being recorded.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Just by way of introductions, there. I know you have a one-page handout, but I want to spend a few minutes to tell you a little bit more about myself and bring some of that page to life and tell you a little bit about my story and what brings me here to Franklin. I'm really thrilled to be here as one of two finalists for your superintendent, and it is a responsibility that I feel the magnitude of. With that introduction, I do feel really honored to be here and would be honored to be the superintendent in Franklin. I come to you from Holliston, nearby Holliston. I'm the assistant superintendent there for curriculum instruction and technology integration. It's a position that I've held for 6 years. I absolutely love it. I've had a remarkable experience in Holliston, and I feel prepared and, based on my experiences, know that I'm ready to take on my own superintendency, and I have a desire to more broadly contribute to the collection of education for children in my own district and work with educators at all levels. Prior to being assistant superintendent in Holliston, I was the assistant principal for student services at Shrewsbury High School. Shrewsbury High School is about the same size as Franklin High School, about 1,600 students, and actually there's many things about the town of Shrewsbury and Franklin that remind me as being very similar, and that's one of the reasons why I like Franklin. I loved my time in Shrewsbury. As assistant principal for student services, I had a classroom background, and by becoming the assistant principal for student services, that really broadened my exposure to various aspects in education. It broadened my exposure to special education, to 504 plans. I was the liaison to the school nurses and the guidance department. So although I had this strong classroom background as a science teacher, that position really helped me see kind of the entire perspective of what goes into schooling for kids. Prior to that, I was, as I had mentioned, a science teacher, but I led the curriculum and instruction in the science and technology department at both Shrewsbury High School and Linfield High School before that. Throughout this journey, at one point I got my doctorate from Boston College. That was a really wonderful experience. The skills that I learned there, I apply today when I conduct my work in the district. Some of that training that I had in terms of writing my dissertation and developing research questions and really thinking through a problem are skills that I continue to use to this day. In addition, I was able to study leadership and change management, budget and financing and human resources. So really feel like that prepared me well to be in central office. It's a place that I love. People ask, do you miss the classroom? I get into classrooms as much as I possibly can. When I miss the classroom, I get out of my office and I go into classrooms and I see kiddos. What I love about being in central office is that I get to work with the little ones, and I get to work with the older students, as well as their classroom teachers. I absolutely have a passion for education. I couldn't imagine doing anything different with my career, and I'm really thrilled to be here with the prospect of leading your district and leading the Franklin Public Schools. And with that, I do want to expand beyond my background and just tell you a little bit about what draws me to Franklin. I am drawn to everything I've heard about the district. I work with a number of colleagues who live in Franklin, and I've heard nothing but great things about your schools, as well as your town and your community. It seems to me from the research that I've done, I'm not here and I haven't lived it, but from the research that I've done, the children here and the families here have tremendous opportunities, both through their participation in school endeavors, but also through the town and the community in terms of the offerings that the community provides. I think the size is a big draw. It is certainly larger than Holliston, but it is similar in size to where I was in Shrewsbury. And I think when you have something on the order of 5,500 students and 33,000 townspeople, you can do more. There's more resources, there's more energy and more collective organization. So I'm really drawn to the size. It's something of a hub here on 495, and there are a lot of additional organizations around, whether it's MIAA, MSSAA, Dean College, among others. And I think that as a collaborative leader, I can only, at this point, I imagine possibilities in terms of connecting the school department to other area resources. So I think there are tremendous opportunities, and I'm really excited at the prospect. And with that, I want to make sure that I'm responsive to your questions that you have of me. So I guess I'll open it up to the floor and see what questions you might have.
I'm never shy. I'm Jessica Pisano. I live here in Franklin. I have a rising sixth grader. I have to start practicing the next year, and I will have a rising high school freshman. And I also teach at Dean. So here's my question to you. We know that there's a lot of really very evidence-based ideas, changes that are happening around the country that feel risky. Things like decreasing homework and changing start time. I know those are risky propositions. So my question to you is, what would your strategies be leading this diverse community of different stakeholders into that sort of really 21st century opportunity?
Great. So you started off by talking about them being evidence-based, and both of those examples are evidence-based. There's research out there regarding best homework practices and the effectiveness of homework. And there's certainly a lot of research and sleep studies regarding school start times. And I think whenever you have that research, you need to know and understand as a leader what that research says. So make sure that you're up to date on the research, but also make sure that you're sharing that research with the group of people that you're working with. I don't think that the work that we do in schools is simple by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's quite complex. And so when I seek out for change, I look to do so with a collective group. A lot of the work that we've done in Holliston is with task forces and study committees. And so that research shouldn't just reside in my head. It should be shared broadly, and we should come to a shared understanding of what that research says. And then, without a doubt, we need to think about the research in the local context, and we need to make sure that we're understanding what the local implications of that research would be, and make sure that we're reaching out to teachers in the classroom, make sure we're reaching out to parents and families, make sure we're reaching out to the students themselves and get their input as well, whether it's homework or school start times. Because those sorts of changes that you may make at the policy level are going to, first and foremost, impact the students and the teachers in the classroom. So you need to develop kind of a local understanding and a local context. It could be through focus groups, it could be through surveys, it could be through other mechanisms where you have kind of key representatives of teachers groups, parent groups, student groups, key representatives feeding you some information regarding the thoughts that you have, and then collectively working to come up with some recommendations moving forward, whether or not to adjust homework policy and practices and school start times. Making those recommendations to the school committee in a public forum so that people have another opportunity for transparency and questions to be asked and to be heard. By way of some examples, one of the projects that we've done in Holliston is around social and emotional learning, which I know is on everybody's minds, as it should be, because it is extraordinarily important. There's a tremendous amount of research base around the importance of social and emotional learning, and that became the basis for a study group that the Director of Student Services and I put together, making sure that we understood the research, we shared the research with our task force, and then based on what the research said, considered the local context of our social and emotional learning curriculum and made recommendations that we are now carrying out in our district in order to bolster students' social and emotional learning skills. So that's a bit about how I would go about it.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Lisa Brady. I have two kids in the school. Same ages, actually. One going into high school, one going to middle school in the fall. So my question for you, you've done a lot of research already on Franklin and the schools. So you probably already know we have one of the lowest per pupil spending rates in Massachusetts. And that has created problems in terms of having to cut programs, cutting language in the elementary, as well as other things. So my question is, Franklin has great schools, and has done a lot with very little funding. What do you envision as opportunities for Franklin to excel, to propel our schools to be amazing, fantastic, top schools that everybody wants to be in?
Sure.
You stole my question.
I've heard that. I've heard that in a couple of different places. And I think it would be a little irresponsible for me to say that I have all of these magic answers. But I could promise that I would take that very seriously and think very deeply and collaborate with people all across the district. Because I think that there's fundamental things I would need to look into to understand regarding the history and the programs and the services in order to make changes. And I would be afraid of coming in and kind of changing something too quickly and then having some sort of domino effect and having it cascade in a way that was unintended. What I can say is that I have a little bit of experience in this realm. The Holliston per pupil expenditure is more than Franklin, but it is below the state average. And so I am kind of used to being in situations where we have very conservative guidelines going into the development of our operating budget and trying to figure out ways to continue to provide high quality services to students, but doing so in a fiscally conservative way. There are a couple of examples that I can give you about where I kind of strategically looked at programs and tried to find more effective uses of funding. One was in our Title I services. Our Title I services were funding teachers and staff, and our operating budget was funding tutors. When you fund staff out of a grant, you're also paying retirement. 9% of that grant automatically goes to retirement. If we shifted that around and we paid the tutors out of the grant, that funding that otherwise would have gone to retirement would then be able to hire more tutors for more hours to provide more services to students. So we made that shift in terms of what was paid out of the grant and what was paid out of the operating budget in order to increase the level of reading services we were able to provide in our Title I program. similarly, I did some work with our ESL services, and again, kind of in a similar fashion, we had some tutoring services, we had an ESL facilitator, and we had a very small number of teachers. In a budget-neutral way, I shifted the FTEs around to provide more certified teachers to our ESL students so that they had a higher quality of instruction in the classroom, but did it in a budget-neutral way. And some creative, we had to do some scheduling as well, but looked at the schedule and figured out how to maximize the schedule to get more effectiveness and efficiency out of those services. So those would be some of the things that I would look at kind of on at the initial level. You know, are there some creative ways that we might be able to look at doing things slightly differently and improving within our constraints? I think kind of medium term and longer term, I think there is a need in Franklin and in other places for superintendents and school districts to be a bit entrepreneurial and to think sort of innovatively about ways in which to generate revenue. And that's not something that we normally think about, but are there revenue generating possibilities? And again, I think about Franklin's size, and I sit there and I say, with this size, is there something that we could do to build a very unique, highly competitive drawing program that perhaps students could tuition from other districts in to because it's so unique and so local. Certainly that it has political ramifications and would need to go through some of the process that I was talking about before. But you are seeing districts developing more innovative programs. Maynard is an example that I would point to. They came to Holliston to look at our French immersion program, and they started up a Spanish immersion program, which has been a draw into their district, bringing more students and more Chapter 70 funding. So that would be another example. Longer term, I think superintendents, as well as elected officials, can do a lot to advocate on the state level. There has been a very significant study that's happened with the Foundation Budget Review Commission, really demonstrating the areas in which the state is underfunding education and that the problem is getting worse over time since the foundation budget was initially instituted in 1993. So we're in this situation where the state's basically not keeping up with its funding expectations, and more and more and more is being kind of funneled down at the municipal level. There are advocacy opportunities through our local organizations like MASS and the Massachusetts Association of School Committees. There's also the Suburban Coalition, as well as just connecting with our state representatives and state senators. And so I think kind of long term, we need to be a little bit more assertive in terms of advocating at that level in order to kind of fix the fundamental problem, which is that we need more support from the state level.
My name is Eileen Sidwell, and I have three children in the school system. The most important job, as we all said, of the school district is to make sure that students are learning and achieving at high levels. And so in order to do that, the superintendent needs to be an instructional leader. And you talked a little bit about your curriculum and instructional work in your role. I hadn't seen that on your resume, so I'd love for you to talk more about that.
Sure, I'd be happy to share more about the curriculum and instruction side. It is an area of passion and love, and the school committee in Holliston kind of laughs a little bit when I start talking about curriculum and instruction, because I get really animated at our meetings when I'm talking about matters in the classroom. My background and my field is science, although I've come to love and appreciate the other content areas as well. As assistant superintendent now for 6 years, I've lived through the new Massachusetts frameworks and the introduction of a new set of math frameworks, ELA frameworks, and now science frameworks, all of which have new standards of practice in addition to content, which I think is really important. that we're not just, we were in this really content-heavy period of time, and now there's more focus on skills, which I think in this day and age, when a lot of information is available at kids' fingertips, they need to have some background information, they need to be able to evaluate that information, but what they do with it becomes, I think, a higher priority and a bit more important, and that they can do their own research and figure out new information. We want to kind of make sure that we're focusing on those skills. So as the district leader for curriculum and instruction in Holliston, I led three curriculum review efforts. We have a curriculum review cycle that that cycles through the content areas, and so we've done three curriculum reviews. The curriculum reviews are done with a pre-K through 12 team of educators, and we start with, our curriculum reviews have actually been a little bit odd because we're starting with new frameworks. So it's been, the first step has been to understand what the new frameworks are and what they're asking teachers to do and how it's to be different, and then comparing our current curriculum and instruction against those frameworks and making recommendations and kind of developing an action plan for the next several years moving forward. As part of that, we also take a look at resources, and we take a look to see if there are new resources that are needed in order to implement that curriculum, new textbooks in science, new materials, new technology, perhaps. So we also take a look at materials that might be needed to implement the new curriculum frameworks. So that has been my more recent experience with curriculum and instruction. I do have some experience at the state level. Kind of going back a few years, I had the opportunity to participate on the MCAS Assessment Development Committee as a biology teacher, which was absolutely fascinating, and I learned a tremendous amount about how they put the tests together. And I learned a lot about assessment myself, at least as far as standardized assessments go. And so I had that experience as well to kind of see that interconnection between the standards and then ultimately where they end up kind of being assessed and how that comes together and how that looks. I love the curriculum and instructional area. It is kind of the core and the heart of what we do. And some of the most rewarding work that I've done has been in those pre-K to 12 review teams, taking a look at what we're teaching children.
Yes. Hi, my name is Kimberly Beers, and I have a daughter who's going into sixth grade in the fall, and a daughter who's in second grade and now moving on to third. I look at how much schools have changed in the last 2 or 3 years that my daughter who's in fifth grade now, what my daughter's doing in second grade now, my oldest didn't do till she was in third or fourth grade. It seems like there's a lot of testing that's going on. It seems like my youngest is constantly having assessment tests. So much to the fact that it seems like schools become about testing, which as a parent, I know teachers try to do the best that they can to be as creative as they can because that's why they got into teaching. But I feel as a parent that some of that is being taken away from teachers because from what I hear, the state is requiring them to do all this testing with our children. What's your opinion on that? And do you feel that what's being required of the teachers by the state is the way that Franklin should continue to follow along with that? Or do you feel that it's time to start pushing back and say, listen, enough is enough. Let these 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds be 8-year-olds, you know, instead of all this structure. And I feel that there's a lot more, children are a lot more stressed because of these tests, because not everybody tests well. And there's a lot more anxiety in children than I remember when my daughter was in kindergarten. just a concern of mine that it's just all about testing because the state is telling us or telling them what to do.
So I think you may be getting at some of where we've been with educator evaluation and this idea of district determined measures. and some of the messaging to kids that's happened through that. And I'll just tell you a little anecdote. My stepdaughter is in eighth grade. She's a rising freshman in high school. I have to get used to saying that too. And I was in the car with her, and she's a bit of an anxious, nervous type. And I was in the car with her. It was just the two of us. And I asked her, "What makes you nervous about school? And what makes you nervous in class?" And she said, "DDMs." And I thought, "DDMs? I can't even believe that you know what they are." The idea that, you know, the message was filtering down from the state to her mouth about DDMs was really concerning. I understand as an educator sort of the context of DDMs, and
some of us here don't know what a DDM is.
The DDM, thank you. District determined measure. The state was saying that for educator evaluation, you needed to add these measures to your kind of testing repertoire, and then they would be used to determine student growth, and therefore it would get factored into the evaluation system and give teachers an impact rating on students. And I think because of that state pressure, it did, you know, that pressure filtered down to the classroom and filtered down to students. And because there has been some pushback, from some of our professional organizations to this very end, there has been a recent rollback of the regulations around district determined measures to ease up and soften and to take those out of the educator evaluation system. So exactly, I think, what you're talking about has happened with respect to this category of assessment. I do think that local assessments are really, really important. I think one standardized assessment at the end of the year gives you a very limited picture of students and their performance. And so we have to put that into context, and we need to have high quality local assessments that give teachers actionable information with which to make changes and improvements to their instruction in the classroom in order to help and support students in their learning. So one of the things that I talk about is a balanced assessment plan, and making sure that as you take a look at your assessments across the year, and that it's thoughtful and strategic, and that the assessments that are happening in the classroom are going to be used. They're going to be used in order to help students grow and to learn. And if they're not, then we need to ask, what's the purpose, and do we need to use this assessment? Should we take it off the plate? Because I do think that there are some unintended consequences happening, but we're not going to get rid of all the assessments. We do need to know how students are doing, but the idea is focusing more on those interim assessments to help kids grow.
Hi, welcome to Franklin. I'm Selena Cousin. I have two boys in the Kennedy District, one that's going to be entering kindergarten and one that's going to be entering fifth grade. One on entering kindergarten is coming in with an IEP, and the one entering fifth grade, you know, has been reading since he's two and is always looking for new and exciting challenges. In Franklin, I feel like we have dozens and dozens of special education professionals. They're mostly focusing on helping kids that need extra services in order to get to sort of where the group is. I'm finding that I don't think we have any professionals in Franklin that are working with the higher end of the students. There's nobody working with gifted and talented education. And I'm finding that, you know, as we do work with a lot of, you know, we have a lot of testing, and as we work with Common Core, that we're sort of teaching to the middle, I find, and which is good for many of the students, but the kids that can pick something up very quickly, don't need a lot of repetition, and want to be actively engaged, you know, and need more challenge and development. I don't know that, I think we're doing a disservice to them in some ways. I guess I want to know, what are your ideas to help, you know, given that we have budget limitations, obviously there are not a lot of gifted and talented programs in Massachusetts, but just for the students that do need to be challenged at a more, you know, at a higher level, how can we do a better job of meeting their needs so that all of our students are helping to more fully actualize their potential.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I like to think about is I like to break it down a little bit and think about what areas the skills are gifted in and what areas the kids are, you know, kind of middle of the road in and what areas they might struggle in, because we're complex human beings. And so I would really try to break it down by sort of that content area, because I think that creates a little bit more of an actionable environment around which to respond to student needs. I think of two potentials. One is this idea of a what I need block. Mm-hmm. And a lot of students will get interventions in a what I need block, but by creatively working within a schedule, because I think most of this happens at sort of the elementary and middle level. When students go to the high school, there tend to be
more leveled courses
and advanced placement courses and ways in which to explore their interests and opportunities. But kind of at the younger grades, if possible, and scheduling is a really complex entity, having scheduled a high school for 5 years, it's a really complex entity. But you may be able to, if we break down the barriers and think about one teacher to 23 students in a classroom, and we start thinking about the grade level of teachers and that they're able to share responsibility. Yes, a student has a homeroom. Yes, they stay with those kids for most of the day. But if we kind of shuffle the students around a bit according to their skill level and what they need, we can then put them into a what I need block, where the students who need some enrichment are getting enrichment from a teacher. It might not be their classroom teacher, it might be the neighboring classroom teacher, but they're receiving some enrichment from that teacher, whereas other students who need some more support services are receiving what they need from that classroom teacher. So kind of some creative scheduling is one opportunity. So sometimes you might hear it as what I need. I've also heard it as plus class. The other idea that I think is emerging, and we're not there yet, but it's kind of an emerging area, is this idea of being able to use educational technology and personalize the learning environment for students based on the educational technology and resources that they can access through a device. And so there are software packages and programs that are pretty sophisticated in terms of kind of taking in information where students are and then bringing them to the next level, or if it's called adaptive software, bringing them to the next level or responding kind of in the other direction to bolster their skills if they need that. So those would be two areas that I think are very doable. Kind of including with limited budget pieces, those are two areas that I think are very doable to be more responsive in the elementary and middle classrooms to all students' needs.
Just a timekeeper, we have about 10 minutes.
Okay. So I have a comment about that. My name is Jaya Pandey. I have two kids on two sides of this spectrum. So my older one, Franklin's, has wonderful, wonderful teachers. He needed those challenges, and they accommodated. All through elementary school and middle school, he was higher level on mathematics. And what you're talking about scheduling, I didn't even have to ask. They took care of those things. So I'm grateful to have those teachers in Franklin. My question to you, my younger one has been on IEP all his life. So I would like to know your take on special education. Like, I understand your concern, but they are our kids too. They need support. So special educators are wonderful in Franklin. My son is one of the luckiest guys to have the best team on earth. But many a time, it depends on leader. Your take decides the course of action for everyone. It's a ripple effect for everyone. So that is one thing I would like to know, what
sure.
your opinion on. Other thing, you come from Shrewsbury. You know it's a very, very diversified town. Franklin is not that much. I see the difference in 14
mm-hmm.
years.
Mm-hmm.
But from Shrewsbury, you go to Holliston, I'm sure you have seen the difference between Shrewsbury and Holliston. So that is another thing I would like to know. How would you collaborate between different socioeconomic status classes and diversified town, which has people from all race and communities?
Okay, two questions there. Just stuck a second one in. That's great. So the first question was regarding kind of my impression and my take on special education services. And I would say similarly, I try to think of students in terms of their skill level in different areas and break that down so that we kind of recognize the strengths that kids have and the strengths that kids bring, but then also where their learning challenges are. I'm a big advocate and a big proponent for inclusion and making sure that students are included in the classroom setting. And to that end, I collaborate very closely with our Director of Student Services in Holliston in order to create the most inclusive classrooms and inclusive environments. And I do agree with you, the expectations that we set as leaders are paramount for the other leaders in the district as well as the teachers in the district. They're looking at us to see what our values are. And so we need to communicate that through our words and through our actions and through our decisions in order to support those inclusive environments. One of the things that I've been active in doing this year, just as by way of an example, is to bring in some resources into the district in order to provide some professional development to our co-teaching teams. We have a model of co-teaching in our elementary classrooms at Placentino, where we have a special education teacher and a paraprofessional supporting two classroom teachers. And the teachers are working together with a consultant over the course of the year. And they had a pullout day to kind of establish their relationship and establish an understanding of the different models of co-teaching. Now they've been practicing those throughout the year. They have some opportunities to revisit that throughout the course of the year with somebody coming in leading them in a book study. And the feedback that the teachers have given us has been very positive, and we've seen them implement some of these models in the classroom. Early to say from a student achievement standpoint, but early indicators are that this experience is going very well and helping to support more robust and rich instruction in those inclusive classrooms. That's all been grant funded by our Title II highly qualified teacher grant. And so that's how I've been able to support that co-teaching professional development for those teachers. In terms of supporting diversity, Shrewsbury is a more diverse community and continues to grow more diverse. Holliston is less diverse, but is growing more diverse, certainly, in all sorts of ways. And I think as a leader, it's been important to recognize what those shifts are, what those changes are, and to make sure that we're providing an inclusive and supportive environment for all of our families. To that end, I've become much more involved, for example, in our ESL program. Really wanted to understand that more and take ownership of it.
What's ESL?
English as a second language. And take ownership of it more. And we run some parent involvement programs, and we have some parent volunteers who help support translation services if needed for our ESL program. And by being more involved in that program, that's helped me understand a bit more about the students' needs and the families' needs, and then respond accordingly. Similarly, by making sure that we're paying attention to the socioeconomic changes we're experiencing, we have recognized a need to respond with respect to our full-day kindergarten program. So I'm fully supportive of our elementary principal who, and we just have one pre-K to two school. It's a large school, but she is putting forward an effort to kind of mitigate the socioeconomic impact for a small number of families with respect to their tuition for full day kindergarten. And I've been fully supportive of her in that endeavor, making sure that she has what she needs from me in order to support her in moving towards some really what's going to end up being the school committee looking at their policy around tuition to help support those families who can't support the full day K.
All right. Sorry to say, last question.
All right.
I'm sorry. Anyone
more? Later. I really appreciate what you kind of said about you know, your perspectives on inclusion. I think, you know, diversity and inclusion is really important, something important to me and my two kids that go to both middle school and elementary school. So can you expand a little bit on that, on your kind of thoughts and feelings and how you approach inclusion from a gender bias perspective?
Sure. That's a great question. One of the things that, this gets back a little bit to the curriculum and instruction question, although it's not limited to curriculum and instruction, I think one of the most authentic ways that we can approach and address diversity is by making sure that we're looking at our curriculum materials and identifying potential bias that exists within our curriculum and instructional materials. So that comes up with respect to gender bias, because there was an example in terms of some of the reading selections at the high school level when we did our ELA curriculum review. So I would point to that as an example, whether it's gender bias or other matters of diversity, taking a look at curriculum and instruction. I think we also need to take a look at our handbooks and our practices. I know in Holliston right now we're currently taking a look, the school committee is taking a look at its dress code policy for gender bias. That is something that has come up, and I think they just passed it on Thursday, where they passed a new school committee policy regarding dress code. There are other practices. In Holliston, we've gone towards a universal color for graduation gowns, so as to not create a binary system of gender difference at the graduation ceremony. So we have one color of graduation gown. And we do have universally inclusive bathrooms for all genders within Holliston High School as well. So that, I think, are some examples. But as a district, I think we need to broadly define diversity. Mm-hmm. Might be gender, might be race and ethnicity, socioeconomic status, diversity among families, and make sure that we're kind of critically thinking about our actions and our practices and what we have in writing, and work towards eliminating bias.
Good answer.
Yeah. I fibbed. I'm in politics, I can fib. Quick question, quick answer.
Okay.
I have three children, high school, middle school, ECDC. So stepping back from curriculum, we're a big system, and we will have a very large staff with also multiple more facilities than I anticipate you have in Holliston.
Yes.
What's your strategic vision?
Could you repeat that question, please?
Okay, so.
No, you. Okay. I can't hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry. So, sorry. So I have three children in the district, high school, middle school, early childhood. And so we have a larger system. You're going to be taking on a larger staff and multiple facilities. So I'm asking, what is your strategic vision to bring all these different organizational cultures, school cultures, into your leadership vision?
Great. I think it's all about that leadership team, that group that comes together on a regular basis. You know, primarily the principals of the building. I think the principals are the instructional leaders of their building. And so making sure that I work to create a really cohesive leadership team between central office and principals, and then broadening that as well to the building leaders. The administrative team, that is some of my most rewarding work, and some of the work that I love to do the most is working with our team. And what we've done, I think we've really gelled together well. Some of it has been based on, constructed very carefully in order to craft team experiences where we can come together. We've also worked to develop a common understanding of best practices and leadership through shared texts, through articles and books that we might read, and discussion groups as a professional learning community. We've begun learning walks as an administrative team, where we visit each other's schools and we go into classrooms. The administrators love that. They love to get feedback from their peers about what their colleagues see. That takes trust. We need to build trust. So it took a little bit of time to build that foundation of trust, but we have that. And so I would take what I've learned about building a leadership team, because I've worked to construct that in my 6 years, and I've had the kind of blessing of the superintendent to do so, and bring that and expand it. It would certainly be a larger team, but expand it to create that same vision. And I think the goal setting process and involving those administrators, the administrative team, in setting some common goals creates kind of mutual interdependence that can then carry forward that collective vision.
Do you have 60 seconds of final statements?
What's your favorite color?
My favorite color is blue.
All right.
I just want to thank you so very much. I hope my values came out in what I talked about tonight. My values are equity, community, and achievement. But it's not achievement at all levels, and it's not achievement on standardized tests. It's really helping kids grow and fulfill their potential, both academically and as well as socially and emotionally. So those are my three core values. I hope they came through in my answering of your questions. I really appreciate your time and commitment and investment in finding the right leader for your district. I have wonderful feelings about Franklin. I drove by your schools. They are wonderful. I mean, schools are so much more than the buildings, but what lovely places for the children
awesome.
To go. And you are awesome. And thank you very, very much.
Let me reiterate how you can give us feedback tonight. We have one more candidate coming. You've all signed in. We will send you, in a manner I don't know, some magical way, an email to your listed address, and we will ask you to send back what feedback you have for us from tonight. We got 26 pages of feedback last time we did that. It is amazing how important that is. Secondarily, if you're listening on the radio, I don't know if anyone listens to things anymore, you may send an email directly to Denise Miller at Central Office, and she will get that. This is an unheard of crowd, so I apologize about the chairs. There's a few up here. Please come up and fill them in. Now we will have 2 minutes to stretch your legs, and then we'll begin right away. All right, thank you. If we had an end of interview session assessment, I would give you all A's. They were good questions, and I think you've got a sense of the candidate, and that's what we're here to do. In 45 minutes, you cannot go in depth, but you certainly can get a feel, and that's what we need to hear from you in your feedback. I am now going to introduce to you Peter Light. He's the assistant superintendent here in Franklin, and I'll let him introduce himself in terms of his background.
Hi, good evening, everyone. Just in case you didn't hear Dr. O'Malley or read the paper in front of you, my name is Peter Light. I am currently the assistant superintendent here in Franklin, but before this year, I was the high school principal for the better part of eight and a half years, something like that. You know, I think I'm not going to talk very long. I did spend my entire career in Franklin, as you can see from my abbreviated resume. I kind of got to a point when I was in grad school where I thought I was going for music performance, and really missed being around kids. And so I ended up with a phone call from a colleague who currently actually teaches here in Franklin still. And she said, you know, why don't you come up? We have an opening. And you know, kind of the rest was history. And then I've just had an opportunity to work with some absolutely incredible colleagues in and around the district. I think, you know, even for an internal candidate, I think the question is really why Franklin? Because in all honesty, the last thing you all want, whether you are a faculty member here or whether you're a community member and parent, the last thing you want is someone who just happened to glom on long enough to outlive everyone. I think that's important, and I want to put that on the table. You know, for me, you know, I have had an opportunity to work with a variety of people in all the schools here, and me moving into a superintendency is a big step because it is a big position, and I think ultimately for me, it's the quality of the faculty, the quality of the community, and the quality of the students we have here in Franklin. You know, I know this community very well at this point. I believe in the community, I believe in our teachers, and I believe in our administrators, and I just can't think of a better place to become a superintendent than here in Franklin. So with that said, I'll turn it over to you and take any questions you might have. Sure.
We're going to go on the same exact order.
Yeah, we're going to go on the same order, make it all easier.
That's the same question.
Yeah,
it should be.
Jessica Bozzano, I have a rising sixth grader, rising high school student, and I also teach at Dean.
Yep.
So we know that there's a lot of evidence-based changes happening in school districts around the country, specifically decreasing and evaluating homework, changing start time. These are also viewed by a lot of people as risky, kind of dangerous moves, but they're clearly evidence-based. So my question for you is, what would be your strategy leading this diverse community towards these evidence-based best practice changes for the district?
That's great. I don't know as though I would categorize anything into risky or not risky, because I think it weighs heavily that there's one correct answer to the solution. I think there's a lot of research that goes out in the world, and obviously the research around school start time is one of the issues you cited. It is absolutely compelling that, particularly for our older students, students need to start later, and younger students are more capable of being able to start early. There is really no evidence to refute that that's the right way to go, but I can also tell you that that is a part of the story for a community. It's not the whole story, and the rest of the story can be one of parents who have work schedules. And, you know, to say that just because the research says one thing doesn't mean that the parents who have other considerations should be discounted, I think, is an important component of that. So in all honesty, I think when you're going to make a large move, and I think, you know, you cited two, I'm going to say a third one in Franklin is going to be districting, is going to come up in the next few years. We have a number of complexes coming online over the next few years, and, you know, school districting is going to be a major discussion. We can put all the facts on the table, but ultimately anything such as a big decision like start time, homework, redistricting, grading and assessment, those are actually cultural changes as well. And in order to do that, you need to have a really thoughtful process that engages the whole community as part of that discussion. And I think to me, it's not just about the facts, it's also about making sure that you have an open, transparent process that provides parents a lot of input into what that looks like. And so the decision you might come out with may not match 100% of the research, but it balances the research against the needs of the community and puts together a solution that you can get most people to buy into. You know, even if we wanted to amend the Constitution of the United States, we wouldn't get 100% vote. But, you know, we certainly need to be able to build consensus within the community. I think in my history as the high school principal, you know, we have pushed some things along in the school, and I think probably heterogeneous grouping has been one of them that, you know, and I can see the eyebrows raise when I say heterogeneous grouping. That, to me, says it's not an area that 100% of people buy into. I can tell you I firmly believe in heterogeneous grouping, and I believe that within that environment you can meet the needs of all learners. Do I think that means it happens every single time? No, and we need to build capacity to be able to do that. But it's something that the high school made a commitment to during my time there. I'm very proud of. And, you know, it's certainly something that we started very slowly and we worked up to over a period of time. So I hope, you know, just kind of putting that out there, example of kind of maybe pushing the envelope in an area that, you know, isn't going to have 100% buy-in, but also really just meeting the needs of the community and research. Yes.
Hi.
I didn't know if there was an order, so I'll try to go right to left to middle to right
That's
to left
okay.
to middle. Just
piggybacks
case.
Off of that, sure. So just give me so I can give some background. Last year, there was significant frustration among parents, students, and math teachers at the high school level. As you know, there was a PCC meeting, if anybody attended, that was quite lively. The entire math department, every single teacher in the math department, agreed that piloting another math level, which you just said you were very pro heterogeneous mixing, would be beneficial to everybody in those frustrations. They brought that recommendation to you, and you said that is not the Franklin way. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is this how you are going to run as a superintendent? You had 18 people who had content-specific knowledge. They brought it to you to ask you to pilot it, and there was no conversation. It was just said, that's not the Franklin way. So is that how you run things? Is that how you're going to run things? And what is the Franklin way?
Sure. Okay. So, you know, to just give a little background, you have some insight that maybe others don't have as a member of the faculty. So what I would say is that the characterization of that may not be 100% accurate to the discussion that happened. I think, you know, you were there last year and we had a part of the discussion last year, but in all honesty, the discussion around heterogeneity is a long-standing discussion at the school. I also want to say this in a politically sensitive way because I do know the community and I do know what the issues around math were last year. And in all honesty, the issues that we were hearing from parents were not aligned with the notion of adding levels to math. That was not the solution based on the feedback that we heard. The solution is actually a more complex one, dealing with grading, assessment of students. It dealt with differentiation of instruction. And so I don't want to mischaracterize that adding levels is a form of differentiation. It's actually not. It's almost the antithesis of that. So I also know that the discussions we've had as a school over the years with not only our department heads, our faculty, administrators at the school, also the core values of the district around heterogeneity, when we say something is not a Franklin solution, that sometimes reflects years and years of discussion. And so sometimes if we're going to rehash an old discussion in a larger context, that might be an answer that no, this is not aligned with the core values that we have at Franklin. So yeah, sometimes it might be saying to your faculty, I have to disappoint you. Your solution is inconsistent with the feedback I'm hearing. It's inconsistent with the data I see. It doesn't mean that a lot of hard work didn't go into coming up with that. I know I attended math meetings last year where we discussed this topic and we did some activities to try and hash out what some of the core issues were with math teachers based on the feedback we were receiving from PCC. But sometimes there is a hard discussion as a leader saying that something isn't consistent with our core values. That doesn't please everyone all the time, but it is a role of the leader sometimes to stand up and say, no, this is the track we're going on, and this is what I believe in.
The culture Caroline. In Franklin so, is Caroline. Terrible.
Caroline, sit down.
Yeah, no, my name is Carol. You know that.
You must
the culture
be
in Franklin is terrible.
This is not kay? For you to politic.
Yeah.
It's for parents.
Okay,
to
I'm
talk.
Asking him a question.
And I'm telling you, please be quiet.
Kay?
This is not appropriate.
Miss.
It is.
Miss. One more outburst. We're going to have to ask you.
Yeah,
leave.
No. You okay. Were prepared for me. The culture in this town is terrible.
Okay. So I'll be
so you to need to know it.
All right, that's enough. That's enough. That is a, with
no,
apologies.
That's it.
With apologies, we're going to have a Carol, we're going to have to ask you to leave.
Yes. Let's go, miss.
No, just Carol. Let me sit here.
No. We miss. Now need you to leave because we have intruded on all these people's time.
Let's go on time.
I said that one thing.
Miss, let's go on time.
All right. That's fine. You can do what you want, but you need to know this is not an issue that's going away.
Mess.
No, it isn't.
Let's go.
Just so you know.
Mess, I know.
You just said the Franklin way. The Franklin way is respectful listening and interchange.
Go ahead. Sorry about that. Yeah, sorry. Back to your question.
That was my question. My name is Lisa Brady, two kids in the school. And my question is, you have the inside scoop on everything in Franklin in the schools, so to cut to the chase, what are two things that you would stop, two things you would start, and two things you would continue?
Wow. All right. So I also don't want to characterize that having the inside scoop on everything that happens in schools. That would be dangerous. You know, no, seriously, that's probably the biggest danger of a leader, is to think that they have the insight. Two things I would stop, start, and continue. Okay. I'm going to stay with start, because I think, in all honesty, I think Franklin is starting from an overall position of strength. When you look at the schools in Franklin, schools are performing very well. We have an excellent faculty. Students come out of the schools very happy with what they're getting. I think, rather than starting and stopping, I like to think of opportunities that we can take advantage of. I think the first is strategic planning. You know, we currently have not had a strategic plan for a number of years, and I think what that can lead to is lack of focus for a district. And I think that it's going to be really important as a community to have a focused plan that's going to take us 3 to 5 years out, because we're going to encounter some difficult times here in Franklin, as we have had in the past, around budgets, around priorities, and, you know, unfortunately, with limited resources, Franklin just cannot have everything. And with a good strategic plan as a foundation that pushes annual plans, budget development, and everything else, I think that's an opportunity to really bring some focus. And when we do hit the difficult times, there's a community building around why we're focusing on certain strategies and goals that we have. I think another opportunity, in all honesty, is personalization for students. I think one of the things that, you know, and this is not just unique to Franklin, this is everywhere in education, but one of the indicators that we're really looking at in education right now is student engagement. And when we look at students who progress through the system, what we see is that students are becoming increasingly disengaged. And what worked for kids 10 years ago is just not clicking for kids now. And we're finding that for a whole variety of reasons, and I will absolutely put out to you that technology is a major driver in that. I think that is also an area that I've heard from parents, and I talked about this when I talked about heterogeneity and my commitment to heterogeneity. I think one of the pushbacks from families and parents and students is that in a heterogeneous environment, their student isn't getting what they need. Mm-hmm. And I think that the concept of heterogeneity is sometimes confused. We put everyone in a room together and teach to the average of the room. I think that is a misnomer, but I think that sometimes what students experience themselves and what teachers strive for can sometimes not be in exact alignment. And that's, I think, where some of the frustrations come on students' parts and on teachers' parts as well, because we're, not reaching every student. I think we've taken some steps forward, and this is an area I would put under, I wouldn't change the fundamental direction we're going. We've taken some steps forward in previous years to put technology into the hands of our students. And what we're finding through research-based education, and there are some districts around that are part of larger consortiums looking at this, is how can we use the technology that's now in individual students' hands to leverage personalization as a strategy? Because one teacher in a classroom of 26 kids, it's very, very difficult to personalize if everything you do is face-to-face instruction. But when you can leverage technology resources and provide different students with different opportunities within a classroom environment, that's a way that you can further personalize learning. You can extend learning for the students who need that. You can also remediate learning where that needs to take place as well. So I've covered 3 of 6. I don't want to take up the rest of the night on this either. I'll tell you, one of the best moments of my school year as a high school principal was the moment that our students returned from Special Olympics. We would send a number of students to Special Olympics every year, and when the kids were returning with their medals, we would get a call from the advisor saying, you know, we're on 495, we're coming to the high school, we'll be there in 10-15 minutes. And we would put an all call out to our faculty and say, anyone who's interested, you know, if you're in the middle of something, we respect that, but anyone who's interested, please feel free to bring your kids down. Let's see if we can welcome our Special Olympians back. And every year, we would have, 1,400 kids out on the front of the high school welcoming Special Olympians back. Franklin has such a huge commitment to diversity and inclusive practice that I think is absolutely a tenet and a core value of Franklin, and you couldn't get me to touch that with a 10-foot pole. It is a moment for everyone to just behold and wonder, and the pride that 1,400 kids felt for the 13 or 14 kids representing them in Special Olympics was breathtaking every year, brought tears to people's eyes, and I know our kids talked about that at the end of the year as a highlight of the year for them. So I'm 4 of 6. So I talked about things I would change, right? Two things I would change. Two things that I would maintain. I think I've hit those two, right? And then what was the other two things I would stop? Oh, geez. Two things I would stop. Geez, I think changing and stopping are kind of similar, in all honesty. I think one thing that I've seen develop over the course of the year is kind of a disconnect maybe on feedback coming into the schools. And again, I don't think this is a stop the practice. I think it's a practice probably we need to expand. Opportunities and a variety of strategies to get more feedback from parents. You know, we heard about a math issue earlier where parents were concerned about math at the high school level. You know, the solution to that actually started last year when we met with our PCC board, and the PCC actually made us aware as high school administrators that there was an issue, which resulted in us then bringing in the department head into a meeting and saying, we need to have a discussion. We want the department head to present, but then we also want to solicit parent feedback. In my experience in Franklin, surveys don't tell all of that answer. They're a piece of it, because surveys don't provide the discussion around some of those important problems. I think that there's an opportunity for the incoming superintendent to start fresh. And I think even though I've been in Franklin, one of my goals coming in as a superintendent would be to start fresh and start those discussions. It's a new school committee, relatively. New administration coming on board, still relatively with all the new principals we have in the district. And I think there's an opportunity for the superintendent to actually have some community forums as well, where, you know, the superintendent can engage in some of these direct discussions. Or if there's a curriculum question, bring the curriculum person and there's actually a dialogue around this. Because sometimes we get bits and pieces of feedback, but without the deeper explanation of what that looks like, we really don't have a solution of what to do with it. So I think that would be an area. I hate to say stop a practice because it's something new, if that makes sense. You know, I'll be honest. I was someone who was a start time person as a high school principal. It was an issue that I hoped we would take up because my background working with older adolescents was they do not do well. So I would hope at some point we actually start a start time discussion. And it's, again, I guess it's partly stopping a practice, but it's changing. But as I said before, that's a discussion because it's not just about what the research tells us, it's about the needs of the greater community as well. Did that come close, hopefully? Yeah.
My name's Karen DePaul. I have a freshman at the high school and a sixth grader at Sullivan. I really didn't have a question, but now I do. So in your last statement, you said the kids are good, schools are great. My kids have had a great experience. And students are happy with the results they're getting. It sounds a little vanilla and a little let's keep the status quo. What's your vision for exceeding the expectations? Mm-hmm. And then sure. A second part of that is my daughter loves the high school. It is fantastic. I would recommend it over private school, not an issue. And I am a proponent of my child having the onus on her for her own learning as well. However, how do you deal with the status quo of the teacher that really is not providing this particular thing, is in an open honors class, and it's a language, which I know all of the languages are, that my daughter herself is making a list of the teaching that's not going on. So how do you deal with that? And how? So I guess it's avoiding the status quo. So how do you bring that?
Sure. Well, I think
to the system.
I'm hearing, and I want to clarify the question first to make sure mm-hmm. I understand where you're coming from. I think I'm actually hearing two questions.
Yep. Probably.
One is how do we move beyond good?
Yes. Exactly.
And then the second question is really about how do we hold all educators accountable so that when we say Franklin has great teaching, there's great teaching happening in every classroom.
Exactly.
Is that a fair summation? I'll take the first half of it first. I think Good to great. I talked about personalization, I think, is the way to go. We've leveraged technology, and we're beginning to go down the path where we can personalize learning for students. And we've done some things where we're providing additional opportunities for kids. I can give you some examples of what we've done at the high school around personalization. First, excuse me, I hate to say
okay.
I'm going to get some water after I finish this. So the first area around personalization, we've had some students who have been performing exceptionally well in mathematics. And as a district, we actually made the commitment, thank you very much, thank you. We made the commitment as a district to have them enroll in online courses through, I think it was for a couple of kids, University of Colorado. And that was courses well beyond anything kids at our high school would take. So we had a faculty member who could advise them. And was absolutely willing to do so and went out of her way to make sure that kids got what they needed. But it was a way of personalizing for those kids who needed it. We've also had opportunities for kids where they struggled to meet our expectations within a four-year time span, which is traditionally what you have, or a 12-year time span and district-wide. And we've provided kids opportunities maybe not to return to the district to continue, but also to enroll, kind of dual enrollment in a community college, be able to take coursework for them. We're also in the process now of exploring some other opportunities through local colleges and universities to begin dual enrollment programs for our students. We have looked at opportunities during my time as principal, and I say we because this was not necessarily a me thing. This is a team effort, and it is people beyond just me doing a lot of this work. But we have introduced programs like Senior Project, which is an opportunity for seniors during the second half of senior year to go out and take workplace internships to make what they're learning more real before they head off to college. We have looked at opportunities coming into the high school with things like Freshman Collaborative to help bring our freshmen along socially and emotionally into the high school with support systems so that as they came in, it wasn't the big bad high school that kids are transitioning into, but a place that had some familiar structures like a middle school does, but personalized to meet the needs of high school. So I think we've tried to look differently at ways to personalize. I will be honest with you, a lot of the research around personalization and how we can leverage technology is really just beginning. If anyone wants to do the research, there's a MAPLE consortium, which is Massachusetts consortium of schools out there looking to personalization. I looked at some of what their districts do, and in all honesty, they had some white papers about tours of high schools. There are some nice high schools on there that they did tours of. The same stuff is happening here in Franklin. And I can tell you that we just didn't become part of that consortium because we had other things going. I think two areas that we can expand upon that have been key. I think at the younger grades, it's really about building a foundation of skills and helping kids develop the skills to prepare to learn. Our strategy in the younger grades should absolutely continue, and that is around social-emotional learning. If anyone follows me on Twitter, that's been my big thing this year is around social and emotional learning, because it's not just about the content of what kids learn. It's about creating A, whole children, but B, what we know is when kids connect emotionally to what they're learning and they learn in a social environment, they learn at higher levels. So that's been a pure focus. We have a lot of research that we've done as a district, and that's an area of focus that needs to continue. I think as kids get older, it's about making sure that their education is relevant to them. And anything we can do to increase relevancy for our students is going to help move us to that next level. I already talked about Senior Project. Some of the other work that we've done in Franklin during my time would be the Franklin Arts Academy, bringing that to the high school. You know, my first year as principal, that was a project that we took on. Those of you know, I have a background in the arts. I was not a student that every class I sat in, I said, wow, this is the end of the world for me. This is what I want to do. The arts were something I was passionate about, and what I found is that by bringing that arts framework into a lot of the academic classes for kids, I thought that was something we could leverage, and it's worked out very, very well, and that's what we're hearing back from kids. Higher levels of engagement. I think that the science program at Franklin High School has come a long way. We have an absolutely phenomenal science faculty who's done a tremendous amount of work in really thinking creatively about the sciences. Here in Franklin, we have community members who have given time and energy helping build that science program. And what we find is that the more opportunities we give to our high school students, and as students get older in the system, and I would even say 7th and 8th grade, but then into high school, the more choice, the more opportunities, the more we can give them courses that speak to their individual needs, the more we're going to end up seeing out of our kids, and the more they're going to look back on their time in Franklin Public Schools and feel like, yes, this met my needs. So that was the first half of the question. The second half of the question was around educator evaluation, really, and holding people accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, first, I've been in Franklin a good number of years, and even though, you know, if you look at my resume, it's not like I've been in education 35 years or anything like that, but I have been in a position where I've heard from a lot of students, I've heard from a lot of faculty members, I've heard from a lot of parents as well. And I think number one is there's going to be conflict that inevitably rises when there are students in classes, because we're dealing with your kids, and there's nothing more important to a parent's child. And so I think number one is building a level of trust within faculty as a goal, that faculty can be open to a dialogue with parents directly about what kids need. I think we're entering an era, in all honesty, that's a really difficult era for educators to be in. And I think sometimes as a community, this is not blame on any one individual, but as a community, we're not sensitive enough to how educators feel they're being perceived in the world we're in. As an educator, I can 100% tell you, teachers feel like they are always under attack. And so when we see a parent email come in, sometimes the educator's first response is, whoa, what's going on here? And I think what we need to be able to do is build enough trust within our educators that when that parent email comes in, we as educators understand, okay, we're dealing with a sensitive issue. This is this person's child. How can we, A, diffuse the situation, and B, engage in a conversation to be able to do that? Because in my experience, 99.5% of the issues that have arisen where a student went home and said to a parent, I don't feel like I'm getting what I need, have been resolved when the parent and the teacher get together and talk. That doesn't mean that that happens every time. I'll be honest with you, and you know, I'll be honest, I've also dealt with some difficult staffing issues over the years. What I think is most important is for an administrator to be visible in classrooms, and be able to give educators honest feedback about performance. And I think sometimes what I've seen, and I think this is changing, and we're building a better culture around give and take and honest feedback, but I think sometimes what I've seen is well-intentioned administrators who are worried about the feedback they're giving and how it's perceived, maybe give it softer, or give it in a way that the educator doesn't really understand what that feedback is, and then we're three steps down the road and the educator's frustrated because the administrator and the educator are at a disconnect. I think we need to continue to build a culture where we can have open dialogue about what performance looks like, when there are issues that arise, continue to have open dialogue around those. But at the end of the day, there is a level of accountability that comes with teaching. And, you know, again, I'll tell you, I've been in classrooms in our district, particularly this year, my focus has been elementary classrooms and middle school classrooms. I've been in a lot of high school classrooms over the years, so I know the high school pretty well. But I've been in other districts as well. We just hosted a visiting team from across New England into our high school. And the feedback coming out of that is they're blown away by the level of instruction in Franklin. But does that mean it happens in every classroom every day? The answer is if it did, someone would be lying to you because it's not humanly possible. People get sick. They have issues in family life. There's an ebb and flow to teaching. We all know that. So we have to debunk that myth. And it's not about perfection, but it's about how do we make sure that our kids consistently have a great experience. And I think there is a level of accountability, but I think accountability has to start with trust. You heard that from one of the community members. She felt like there was a trust issue in Franklin. That is at least one person in this room's perception. And we're not going to sit here and say that that person doesn't have their perception of that issue. They do. So we have to embrace the fact that that happens and that occurs and people have different perceptions at different times. So now what do we do with that? But I believe, in all honesty, it's trust and accountability, trust and accountability, trust and accountability.
Thank you.
10 minutes.
Yes.
Hi there, good evening. My name is Selena Cousin, and I have two boys in the Kennedy School District. One's entering kindergarten, and one is going to be entering fifth grade. Mm-hmm. I want to specifically, within the context of elementary school, I wanted to talk about gifted and talented education and education for the students that are at sort of the higher end of the performance, however you want to phrase it.
you know, as you know, we have dozens and dozens of special educators in Franklin, but none of them are focused on those kids that are at the top of the performance of their class. So while we've been really fortunate, I have to say, preface it, at Kennedy, to be assigned to the teachers that really are very talented and gifted with regards to differentiated instruction, they're not all like that, and we've been very specifically put into certain classes. My question, and not always, because there was a year when we came in October to learn that my first grade student had already mastered all of the words in first grade and second grade, and that was it. He was getting his M, and that was, you know, he had met the requirement, and that was, I was like, well, then what? And that was it.
Right.
So my question is, how do we as a district, whether we have we have limited resources, how do we make sure that we're really not doing a disservice to those kids that don't need the level of repetition and discussion and practice as some of their classmates? How do we make it, district-wide, that it doesn't matter that you're getting into this classroom or that classroom, but where we're teaching towards, right now I think we're teaching a lot towards the middle and towards test-taking and Common Core knowledge, how do we make sure that we're not doing a disservice to all of our kids, fully actualizing their potential for growth and development?
Sure. And I think I've kind of hit on this previously in some of the talk that I absolutely fundamentally believe, it's late at night, in heterogeneity. But I also believe in personalization as the tool to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I think to get more specific to that, we have, what we are fortunate to have in Franklin are some tremendous resources and some of our curriculum enhancement teachers and various lead teachers at the elementary schools. And I know that those teachers do work extensively with classroom teachers to provide a variety of levels of instruction within the classroom. I think that I've heard that as an issue raised over the course of the year, this year, that there's a need for more for a population of students who maybe needs more level of challenge. I'm not going to tell you that I have one solution that is an end-all be-all to that, but I actually think that when you look at the notion of personalization, providing faculty with extra professional development to be able to meet a variety of levels of needs within a classroom, that's going to help to get to that solution. I'm not sure if I understand the question. Are you saying, do I believe in having a gifted and talented program?
No, I understand that there are very few in Massachusetts, and we probably don't really need them in Massachusetts, to be honest. But as a district-wide, who is providing the oversight of providing the appropriate academic challenge to these kids when they've already...
Okay.
When they're very easily meeting the norms and the curriculum and already meeting the things that need to be, where you need to get the M by the end of the year,
okay.
When they're already meeting that, when they get in the year.
I think that helps me zone in on it a little bit.
How are we, what resources are we doing? So that it doesn't just have to be, I happen to have the teacher that is able to provide all that differentiated instruction, but the other two in the grade might not be able to do that. How do we make sure that it's really across Franklin and not just maybe at Kennedy, but at every school? I mean, if I'm saying it from our consistently level one elementary school, I can only imagine from my friends at other schools that it might be even worse at other schools. And so how do we, across the board, make sure that we're not doing a disservice to these kids?
I think that's a coordination question more than anything else. And I think that that's something that you have to look at through a leadership structure. There's no kid that should ever be sitting in a classroom doing something over and over again that they can already do. That absolutely will lead to burnout just about 100% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it kills kids leaving a classroom with a sense that I'm passionate about this, which is really our ultimate goal. I think we have some structures in place within the schools, like math CETs, curriculum enhancement teachers, CET, just in case anyone didn't have the definition of that. But we do have structures in place in the schools where we're able to provide additional resources to teachers and time and training, and sometimes CETs will pull kids out of classrooms, provide some additional enrichment opportunities. I think that is certainly something that happens in Franklin as needed, but I think what I'm hearing is there's a need for a higher level of coordination of that to make sure that every teacher in every classroom knows where those resources can be accessed, and that if they're in the process of assessing students, they know where to go if they have a student who's pre-testing that they've already mastered some type of a content or skill. Sometimes I will also say that teachers may assess students and there's a bit of a disconnect because certain aspects of a skill or standard are in place, but there may also be some gaps that a teacher wants to provide some extra structure to. But I definitely think we need to have resources in place for all teachers, and teachers need to be trained in how to implement those resources. I would much rather have the resources available than have one classroom that kids go to for those resources, because I think it's going to lead to better identification of students. And in all honesty, it's not about reaching. I don't believe that high achievement is a right of real estate that you get to based on past performance. I think it's something that should be fluid, so that if you are achieving on a certain set of standards at a time, mm-hmm. you would excel in those standards. But you may need more support in other areas.
Mm-hmm. There's no question that there are more questions, but there's not more time. We all have come here out of our own taking time from our own families and in our own schedules, and to keep you beyond when we said, I don't think would be fair to the large group. So with apologies, I'm going to ask Peter to give a summation, and we will end our evening.
Do you have two more questions? I think there was not a sufficient number. We had a disruption. I think we have a good 5 minutes.
You think
with
so?
With all due respect.
She's on the school committee. She's on the school committee, and the school committee is never wrong. Therefore, if she says 5 minutes, 5 minutes.
I thought I'll try and be very, very concise and see if I can answer them quickly. I'll go over here and then back toward the middle.
Hi, I'm Lane Lovell. I have 3 children, a 6th grader, a 5th grader, and a 3rd grader. And I'm just going to piggyback on what the woman in front of me was talking about. You mentioned personalization, you mentioned individualization, communication between school and home. And I understand your point about the personalization, and I agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. What I'm having a hard time with is the way that the assessments are being done in the school, mm-hmm. with the mastery, and I can't remember all the terms, but the progressing toward the new. And I can guarantee you, when the report card comes home tomorrow,
right.
everything will be in the middle column mm-hmm. for all 3 mm-hmm. of my children. And at the end of the year, we will be over here on the left, and at the beginning of the year, we will be progressing toward the standard.
Right.
It is the most frustrating communication between the school and the home,
yep.
and I don't understand how that's going to appropriately assess where my child is so that we can do what you're describing.
Wow.
All right, we're on the third rail. Grading and assessment. We are on the third rail of education. I will promise you that for as frustrating as that is, you're going to be bitterly disappointed when you start seeing letter grades come home. And you come to a realization that different teachers have different standards for how they grade. Because in all honesty, I have a 6th grader who's on letter grades, and I have a 4th grader who is on mastery of content. And I can tell you, my most frustrating moment as a parent moving into middle school was when we started seeing letter grades come home. And as an educator, I knew what the teacher's criteria were, and I knew he had one teacher who was giving 1 and 2 assessments a term, and my son was ending up with very high grades. I also knew that I had other teachers who were giving, you know, 3 assessments a week, and it was varied assessment strategies and everything else, and I'm going to come right back to this question over here, grading and assessment, this is an area of need, because grading in education is changing radically as we move forward. What we need to be able to do is to give parents a clear understanding of what does your student know and yeah. what does your student need to continue to learn, and what does your student already know and how are we moving them on. That's the ultimate goal of grading. Whether or not it says M, A, F, D, B, P, I, that doesn't matter, because an A, in my experience as an educator, does not mean that that student mastered 100% of the content. Just like I have seen kids with D's in school who have a higher level of mastery than a kid with a B. And grading and assessment we are in the middle of a cultural shift around that. We are in the process of trying to move toward it. Do I believe in standards-based grading? I'll be honest with you, I absolutely do. Does that mean that what we do is necessarily clear to parents about what does an M mean? I know the biggest question I had as a parent when I started seeing my child's report card was, does an M at the middle of the year saying met standard, does that mean my child is done? Does that mean that you didn't cover it till this term and now he's met it, but does that mean you're not doing it again and he's all set? Does it mean if he's progressing? What does that mean? I actually think that's an area that we can probably do a better job communicating with families around exactly what this means. But ultimately, at the end of the day, there's no letter system we can put into place that really communicates that. I think even prior to getting that out, I think what we need to do is make sure we're giving enough time to our teachers to be able to look at student work collaboratively, so that whether it's a proficient in one classroom means a proficient in another classroom, or an A in one classroom at a secondary level means an A in another classroom at a secondary level. I think that is a much bigger priority, and giving teachers time to be able to look at student work collaboratively so that teachers understand what proficiency levels are, regardless of letter grade, than it is to necessarily say we believe in A's or we believe in M's. It's all the same problem in education. But my experience working with teachers is it comes down sometimes to a lack of time that teachers get to really sit and collaborate around looking at student work. So I think clarity around grades is going to come from consistency among teachers.
Peter, I just want to say congratulations that you're one of two. I just had two quick questions. One, why didn't you go up for the first time? And what makes you feel like you're qualified when you've been in this current position less than a year? So maybe a couple of successes that you've had as the assistant superintendent.
Sure. I think there's a variety of reasons personally why you choose to apply to be a superintendent. In all honesty, this year has been a nice opportunity to breathe a little bit. Being a high school principal, you know, I think it was the JPCC this morning. Someone said, your ears must be ringing, because they were talking about the superintendent search process. And I said, as a high school principal, my ears have been ringing for 9 years. Because you are the talk of every dinner table. Every decision you make, you know, when you're a high school principal in a community, you are going to have decisions that are wildly popular with families, and you're going to have disappointed a whole bunch of people. And I'll be honest with you, I have lived with every disappointment that I've had to give because they hurt. You want to be able to do everything for every person that comes in front of you. And yet at times, and I've said this to parents and I've said this to kids, the worst decision is when I've had to balance the needs of one person sitting in front of me against the needs of 1,700, and the needs of the one are in conflict with the needs of 1,700. And you do have to make those decisions as a leader. And they're difficult, they're frustrating, you don't come out with a good feeling about it, and I don't take lightly the extraordinary burden that a superintendent carries to be able to make those decisions, knowing that any human being is going to make some great decisions in their life, and any human being is not going to make some of the best decisions that they would want to in hindsight. I really needed to make sure I was coming to grips with that, and then when I applied for the position, I was applying for the right reasons for me and also for my family. I value my family. Nothing is more important to me than my wife and my kids, and being a superintendent is incredibly time-consuming. Similar to being a high school principal. And I've seen that not as the high school principal for a year. I've had an opportunity to do some different things. It grates on you. It taxes you. Physically, it taxes you emotionally. And if you're going to take on that job, you better be serious that you're ready for that job. And so the first round of applications really came very early in the school year, or earlier than now. And I hadn't reached a point where I could say I'm 100% all in. And I needed to be able to look at it and see some extra time. At the end of the day, I just want what's best for Franklin. And if, you know, I know Sarah, I know some of her work, she's outstanding. If she's the candidate choice for Franklin and she's the best fit for this community, I think that's fantastic. In all honesty, I'm not applying for me. I want to move this district forward, and whoever ends up being the right fit for that is the right person for Franklin, and I will absolutely get behind them and move things forward. And if I'm that choice, I'm thrilled to be able to do it, because we have awesome educators here, and we have awesome parents, and we have awesome students, and it's just the right time and place. So Can you repeat the second part of that, though? Sorry, that was a long answer.
The second part, given the fact that you've been in the position less than a year, and the requirement is 3 years, what are some of the outstanding accomplishments that you've had to make, besides your family decision to move forward?
Yeah.
If you could just give us two or three examples of...
I'm really proud of the work that we've done in social emotional learning over the year, and I'm not going to take credit for all of it because it's a longer process. I think I've talked about some of my most prideful accomplishments as high school principal, and I'm still going to stand behind those because we have a very large high school compared to most, and you know, I managed a $12 million budget. I managed, you know, 160 faculty members and staff members in the school and almost 2,000 students. There are many, many districts where the superintendent of schools has fewer faculty, students, and a smaller budget than we have at Franklin High School. I'm also really proud of working with the community to get the building project passed. You know, I will say we are not a resource-rich community, and what I pride myself most on, and I think makes me qualified for this position, is understanding the resources of this community and yet being able to navigate within the structures here to get some things done and move some things forward. That, to me, is where I feel most confident of my qualifications. I understand where Franklin is. I understand the constraints. I think I have a pretty good handle on the opportunities, but number one is the opportunity to listen and come in and really hear what people want to do to move this place forward. But then I understand how to get things done in the community. And that's what I would stand on primarily. Social emotional learning as assistant superintendent, I'm really excited about what we're doing. We're also working on revamping all of the school's emergency plans. And that's something that we started kind of earlier in the year, taking a look at some different incidents we were seeing happen in some of our schools and seeing some opportunities for growth. We're in the process of looking at all of our emergency planning and responses for the district. We have worked on educator eval. I've participated in negotiations, not only for the last contract, but when we created the educator evaluation system, I was part of that team. So I've also had experience with a lot of the negotiation processes of a large district.
Thank you.
So hopefully that gets to some of the background.
In fairness to our last candidate, in the equality of time and whatnot, why don't you give us a summation statement?
In addition to that, wow. No. In all honesty, thank you for the question, because the question was a summation statement. Bottom line, I'm just going to sum it up a couple quick points. I've been in the community for a while. I really do love this community, and I have a lot of belief in our kids primarily, our faculty, and our parent community, and the interest in the community of moving its education system forward. Secondarily, I also understand the limited resources that Franklin has, and I hope that some of my track record of having gotten some things done in Franklin for our students can speak to my ability to get some things done on a greater scale as a superintendent of a district. I will absolutely be the first person to say that I have been in a high-profile position in this community for a number of years, and as I said before, there are decisions that I will wear on the sleeve for the rest of my life because I wish I could sometimes go back and change them. Some of them I could go back and change, others I'd have to stand by and say, no, that was the right decision, even though it hurts. I had to pull in, you know, for example, I had to pull in one of my veteran faculty members in the first 3 weeks I was on the job and tell him I was laying off that faculty member. And what I'm proud to say is that person came back to me when they retired, because we were able to find a way to keep that person on board. They came back to me when they retired and said, you know what, you made a commitment to me, and I really appreciate that. And so there are challenges. You're going to hear the good, you're going to hear the bad, you're going to hear the ugly, because I've been in Franklin, and you know all of my decisions. They're out on the sleeve. They're for you to read. So that's what I would leave you with, and I just want to take an opportunity and thank you all for coming out tonight. The fact that this many people came out says a lot about the value you place on education. Thank you.
Last bit of wisdom, doesn't matter who we pick. If you're not there for them, if you don't interact with the superintendent, we could pick anyone in the world. To make this work, you have to join with us. We have places to go in Franklin. This is a really good place to go to school. We can be better.
Yep.
And we need you to do that. Two excellent candidates. Please tell us, sign up, tell us your feedback. It really does matter. Thank you for coming out tonight.
Yeah, thank you.
Good.
This brings the recording of the March 20 Community Forum to a close. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but I can't do it alone. I can use your help. How can you help? If you like this, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like this, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. Thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is entitled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tintype Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy.